News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 8th of March, Anno Domini 2009, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
I'm Alex Vanderwill.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use. Here's the first thing. Big question right now, Twitter is integrating a search function into its site, a move that will put the company in a more direct competition with Facebook and Google. Twitter is an online service that allows people to post instant messages, known as tweets, which can be read by others. The company has had a search function for some time at search.twitter.com, but only began putting a search box on a growing number of users' pages starting March 6th, which would be 2 days ago. Twitter has also included a trends menu where users can see the subjects currently generating the most online traffic, such as Watchmen. The move promises to increase competition with Facebook and Google, which have been trying to strengthen their search and social networking capability. Twitter's rise as a messaging and collaboration phenomenon has been rapid, but of course there have come a few issues, particularly phishing vulnerabilities, as with any one of these sites. So a lot of organizations have been using Twitter often as a way to connect with customers. A search function actually offers the opportunity to sell online advertising, which is, of course, how Google has been making all of their money.
Yeah, that's been one of the big things with Twitter. They just got another $30 million in venture capital. They don't have a business plan. They don't have a monetization plan. They're just taking money.
And we're on Twitter now.
Yep.
As of today, you can follow us at sound_bytes. Don't forget that underscore, because there's already that company in England. They got to Twitter before I did. You can even tweet us during the show if you want to, but for God's sake, make it something relevant to what we're talking about. One of the reasons that I don't hang out in the IRC chat anymore is they're not talking about anything we're talking about, and I can't carry on two conversations at once. I'm doing everything else. I can't do that, too. So if you want to tweet us during the show, feel free to do that. That, of course, leads us to our poll of the week. Every week we do a poll at soundbytes.org. That's bytes with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And how sound underscore bytes with an underscore, Francis would like us to remind you. And the question is, my favorite social networking site is, and your choices are Facebook, MySpace, Second Life, Twitter, Neighborhood Bar, or Coffee Shop, and I Hate People. Two things. First, yes, this is exactly the same poll we did 3 months ago. Get over it. And secondly, if there's some other social networking site you like better, get over it. Or, you know, put up your own website and have your own polls. So far, of course, out of the 70 people who voted so far, I Hate People naturally is number one on this list. Twitter has no votes, which is why nobody's following us on Twitter, and that's fine with me, too. When you're done with that, of course, you're going to have a lot more to say about this, so if you look at the little yellow box underneath the poll, you can click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
And you can leave an opinion. What makes your favorite social networking site your favorite?
Did you hear that Barbara Walters took down Twitter last week?
No, hum a few bars.
Yeah. Apparently, she was talking. I saw this on G4. I don't watch The View. So they were talking about it on G4, Attack of the Show, where Barbara Walters was talking about Twitter on The View, and Whoopi Goldberg is, "Twit, what? Twit, you know." And so for the next couple hours, Twitter was down, and you couldn't get to it. So many millions of people were looking up what Barbara Walters was talking about. They took the site down.
Nice.
It got real big during the election because Obama was Twittering a lot during the campaign and sort of bringing it to the forefront. A lot of people in the
now John McCain is Twittering
now, yeah,
from the floor of the floor of Congress. Yeah,
a lot of the technical people have been saying that as soon as Twitter hits mainstream, it's going to die because they've been having a hard time scaling it. And Britney Spears got on last year, and it died for a while. And now, you know, Barack was on it. He's got 100,000 people following him, and it died for a while.
Well, it's not that it doesn't scale. They just haven't had the money to scale.
Right. So this new $30 million capital they got.
Right. Hopefully.
How many servers do you suppose it is?
It's got to be a
Yeah.
That's the other thing people have talked about is knowing that when you post a message, 100,000 people are going to get your message directly.
Can, yes.
And speaking of which, I have a brief Twitter story. I was up in the wee hours of the morning waiting for the correct time to change my clock.
Sure.
And
sure, God forbid you change it a little early and then go to bed.
Oh, no,
lay awake all night. Yeah,
no,
yeah,
I'm
yeah,
the
yeah.
one that sets it to WWE, National Time Standard.
Right.
Be that as it may, have you ever heard of David Pogue?
I have.
I follow David Pogue.
Sure.
Internationally known author and member of TED.
Sure.
This guy Twittered, and he mistakenly didn't Twitter to the one individual he meant to get his telephone number.
Boy.
He Twittered to all of us his private cell phone number.
Nice.
Now, I'm not going to repeat the number, of course, but just an object lesson. Make sure what button you're clicking when you click anything.
Well, here's the important question. Can you change your number that quickly on a Sunday?
Well,
I'm sure he's abandoned his phone by now. He may not have a new number.
His option is pretty much turn it off.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And before we get to the phones, I do want to announce that this Tuesday in Second Life at 6 p.m. Second Life time, which is 9 p.m. daylight savings time here in the East, I will be on a show called The Second Question. You can get to it at thesecondquestion.com. It's in Spindrift. Pookie Anderson was kind enough to come to our show on Friday night in Second Life, and she invited me, and I think she invited Dave, but Dave can't make it, to come this this Tuesday, and they do their own show. You can also download the episodes on iTunes and at thesecondquestion.com. It's a kind of a quiz show. Unlike our friend Tom's quiz show, their answers are things like quack particles and Giordano Bruno and Paris, Missouri. Excuse me, Florida, Missouri. It's actually next door to Paris, Missouri. But that's Tuesday night at Second Life, 6 o'clock Linden time. So,
and 7 o'clock Tuesday night at Brighton High School. Brighton Library, thank you. The Rochester Computer Society will be having a special guest.
And that special guest will be?
Myself.
You, absolutely. Steve Ray, ladies and gentlemen.
We'll be talking, what was the title I came up with?
The Crowd Goes Wild.
Dispelling the myths of platform interoperability.
And I'm doing a talk on network security at the Yacht Club. What's that called? Look. This Wednesday.
Wednesday. Also Wednesday, 7 o'clock at East High School is the Apple Cider Meeting. This is our general elections and business meeting, but then we're going to be talking about internet radio.
Oh, Doc's got it. Yeah, about my presentation at the Genesee Yacht Club this coming Wednesday.
Well, perhaps we should talk to Doc first about that presentation, if you don't mind. Let's talk to the doctor.
Hey, Doc.
Hey, good evening, guys. Or good afternoon, I guess.
How are you?
Fine. Just wanted to let you know that Dave is going to do a presentation about internet security at the Genesee Yacht Club Wednesday night at 7 p.m., and we have decided to open our doors to any members of the listening audience who would like to come down to the Yacht Club and listen to Dave with his presentation. I know that today, with all of the email scams that are going out there, that internet security is more important than ever.
Yep. Yeah, there's a new scam going around about the economic stimulus bill that you have to fill out this form to get your money. No, there is no form. People aren't going to get money. Don't be fooled by it.
Well, there's another new one going around that's saying, we're sorry we were unable to process your job, but if you will fill out this questionnaire, we will keep your records on file, which, of course, is a complete scam to get all of your information.
Yeah.
Well, there's a number of them out there, and we're going to cover quite a bit of it, and pros and cons on a lot of different stuff, so it should be a good time. Like I say, usually I also open it up to the audience and get some of their questions. So,
Doc, where is the Genesee Yacht Club for those few of us who don't park our yachts there?
All right. It's where Stutson Street Plaza, down by the bridge down there. Right across the street from Stutson Street Plaza, there's a red light. You take a left, and you just follow the Serpentine Road to the end, and you end up at the Genesee Yacht Club. Or
where the Stutson Street Bridge used to be.
Yeah, exactly.
You follow that down a ways. And
now it's the Colonel O'Rourke Bridge.
Right, and you stop before the water, apparently?
Before
the mud.
You can do a map quest.
I always wanted one of those cars that you can just drive into the water, and it turns into a boat.
Yep.
A duck.
No. This is actually a convertible car.
Yes, they call it the Duck.
They did that on Top Gear, tried to make three different amphibious cars.
There's a guy in Fairport at least a couple times during the season, especially usually on a Tuesday night because they have car night there. He shows up with his car, and it's one of those cars, and he literally takes off, goes into the canal.
I always wanted one of those.
The car is called the Duck?
Yeah.
Because that was also an Army transport.
That's the one I'm familiar with. The car actually had a different name of some sort.
Just amphibious car.
It was in one of the early James Bond films.
Also, if you just search the GYC.com, you'll find the website, which has a map.
There you go. All right, thanks, Doc.
Okay.
We're going to take a quick break while we all haul our yachts out of the water and scrape off the barnacles with our ducks.
We're
going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Henright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Alex Vanderweel, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you. It is 16 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
I'm Alex Vanderweel.
And at 21 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. The heck with the news. Let's go right to the phones. Our first caller is Dennis from Honeyoy. Welcome, Dennis. What's your question?
I have a problem with email and sending an email, specifically sending an email with an attachment. When I send it, I get an error message, so to speak, that says semantic email proxy identified as such. Your email message with the subject of the da-da-da was unable to be sent because the connection to your email server was interrupted. Please find the email in your sent folder and resend it. So whenever I take an email and attach something to it, I run into this problem.
What service do you use for email?
I have an AT&T internet service that I use.
What program do you use? Outlook Express? Thunderbird?
I use Windows Mail.
Yeah.
It could be a security setting, though. He's using good old Norton, which maxes out and blocks.
I reinvented the wheel, and I sent the attachment again. This time, I shut off my email scanning.
Yeah, if you shut off the Norton scanner.
And did it work?
No, it didn't work.
How big an attachment is it?
It's a flyer. The density's not high. It's not a photo.
Yeah, but how many K is it?
Oh, I don't know the answer.
Most email systems limit you to 1 or 2 megs of file attachments to fit through the email. That email wasn't intended for file attachments. There are better ways to send files. So most email systems will prevent you from sending attachments that big, and that may be what's happening is the server closes the connection. So while Norton is scanning your email, trying to send the message to the server at the other end, it's just too big to fit, so the server closes the connection.
I don't have Roadrunner or anything like that. I have just regular dial-up.
Right.
And that's even worse.
Yeah, that's
so
even
you've got,
harder.
And there's the fact that if you're using Windows Mail, the Windows Mail system has been changed, and they've got some of their own security on there. So look in there.
They prevent attachments because of all the security problems.
Okay.
Particularly if they're JPEGs or whatever.
Yeah, I watch this thing set up to send, and I get this little window with the green progress bar.
Yeah.
And for a split second, right at the end, I can see the disconnect function.
Just
the blink of an eye, and then the thing closes down.
But when you don't send attachments, you have no problem with your email.
No, I don't.
You've got one of two problems. Either Windows Mail is set up to block attachments, and you can check that in your settings.
Okay.
Or AT&T is blocking, and try sending an attachment that's very small and a text file. See if that goes through. Then you'll know the problem is either the size or the fact that it's a JPEG. Chris?
I would advise you to consider that is a Dropbox, an internet Dropbox. One such source is Dropbox.com. You can have this Dropbox show up as a device in your Finder. What do they call it in Windows?
The Windows Explorer.
You can put the file in this device, which is actually on the cloud, and then you send a link to it in the email to your friends.
Yeah, there are better.
And then you're going to break our rule of never clicking on a link in an email, but that's a way around this.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of these services set up. FTP is the generic way of sending files through the internet to get around this issue with email, which wasn't intended to send files.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you for your help.
All right, thank you so much. Our next caller is Bud from Buffalo, New York. Welcome, Bud. What's your question?
How's it going, guys?
Good. How are things in Buffalo?
Good, good, good. Nice, beautiful day, just like it is in Rochester.
Exactly. Oh, we've got mist and fog and clouds.
Better than the white stuff, so.
Exactly.
Don't have to shovel this.
We're about to get Fios in this area.
I hate you.
Sorry.
I hate you with a deep and abiding passion, just so you know.
I've been watching the truck string the wire along on just about every street, and I'm just been counting the days. So they started in November, and it's taken this long to get
What suburb
here.
Are you in, Bud?
I'm in the town of Tonawanda.
So okay.
They do it by sections. They break the town into smaller sections, and they'll turn on certain sections as they go along. So.
Right.
And I currently have Verizon DSL, and it's supposed to be rated at 3 megabits. I normally get about 1.2 to 1.5 on a good day. I think I'm right at the edge of the distance from the substation.
Right.
Now, with Fios, they're offering 10 megabits or 20 megabits. I have the DSL coming in now and running an airport wireless network throughout the house. Is what they say they're going to bring in exactly what you end up getting? Do you know offhand? Or
it's a lot closer. The problem, as you know, with any of these things is distance.
Mm-hmm.
But distance in fiber means a lot less than it does in copper.
Copper, yeah.
Right.
It means virtually nothing.
Yeah, exactly. So you should get, let me tell you my little story. My DSL, they promised me 4 and I'm getting 6.
Oh.
So, you know, I can't, it's 50% more than they promised me, so I can't argue with that. But the thing is, you never know until it's actually in, but with fiber, the chance that you're not going to get what they're advertising is way, way less.
Well, the other thing,
and you know what? If you end up with 9.5, I'm not crying for you, bud.
Well, it's also how many other folks are on that particular D-slam.
No. If you're in DS, that's true with cable modems because you're on a head end. With DSL and with Fios, you are the sole owner back to the central office.
Oh, really?
You have your own virtual circuit.
Right. Mm. So you have your own virtual circuit.
The limit there is distance rather than the number of people using
it. Right.
But then from that CO on, it's the number of people using it.
Well, but so by then you're in a pipe that's so big it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
You hope.
Now, would it make a difference if I have, currently I have wireless, I can wire up a few of the computers, is it going to make a difference with wireless?
Well, yes.
Wireless is only going to go as fast as your wireless goes. So if you've got 11 megabit per second wireless.
Yeah, do you have A, B, G, or N wireless?
Well, I have, most of the computers are G. I do have an iMac that's rated for N.
Yeah, so G is 54 megabit.
Okay.
So it's significantly faster than your internet connection.
But you're never going to get 54 megabits because your max right now is 1.5, right? Your max with Fios will be 10 or 20. So trust me, the bottleneck here is not going to be your wireless.
Computer to computer, you'll get 54. But since your internet service is so much slower than your Wi-Fi already, then the internet service is always the bottleneck.
Okay, and then I'm running Macintoshes, so I know I get very low amount of support on Macintosh from anywhere.
Right.
So they're going to bring in, I think it's an ActionTech router, wireless router, because we're getting television, too, and they use the wireless router to update the set-top boxes as far as the TV, online TV guide.
Cool.
I doubt they're using wireless. They're probably using it over wire.
The coax, but apparently they update the boxes wirelessly, so you can't. I can't take out their wireless router.
So, from box to box, they're not going to be driving a truck 100 feet from your house to update everybody's box,
right?
Because that's the limit of wireless.
Right.
So you're going to run into two problems. You want an Ethernet connection to plug into your existing wireless router. And Ethernet is Ethernet. It doesn't care what computer's at the other end.
Mm-hmm.
But now you're going to have a second wireless network. So you might want to talk to them about having just your televisions talk to the wireless network by itself and not use their wireless for Internet connection, because having multiple wireless networks is going to be confusing to the system.
Okay. So if they just bring out another Ethernet cable, I can plug in my airport routers. And
you just need you probably need to reset the airport router so it knows about the new connection.
You're also going to run into a little bit of crosstalk with two separate access points running both.
You
may have to change channels between them, which that's common in portable telephones too. You want to have at least a 3-channel separation so you can change your airport to channel 4 and the Fios wireless to channel 9 or something like that. There's 14 channels you can pick
right,
from.
Right, they're probably stuck at 6, so if you go up to 10 or 11, you should be good.
Great, great. Okay, well, thanks much. When is Files coming to Rochester, do you know?
Never, never that I know of. I hate you. Shut up, Bud. Just shut up!
Let's tap off of
Hang
Bud's.
Up on Bud. Yeah. Hang up on him! Congratulations,
yeah,
Bud.
We're a little stuck here because Frontier is the telco, and they're not doing Fios. So
right.
Verizon can't. Theoretically, Verizon could come in with Fios Internet, but not Fios Telephone, because Frontier gets a legal monopoly on wired
it's
telephone.
It's a legal monopoly.
Gets a legal monopoly, yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, the mighty Alex Vanderweel, who does such a phenomenal job for us every week. I'm Nick Francesco. You are indeed continuing for no discernible reason to listen to the greatest computer show in the known universe. That is Soundbites, and we are right here every Sunday on 1180 WHAM, so stay tuned. We will be right back. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Alex Vanderweel.
And you can even see Alex.
And now you can even see Alex on the webcam. It is 35 minutes after the hour, and we are Sound Bites. Our next caller, I don't know who our next caller is, Dave. There we go. It's Dan from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dan. What's your question?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I've got a question in regards to Microsoft Automatic Updates. I'm running a Dell PC with Windows XP Home Edition. It says version 2002, Service Pack 3. Currently, I have the auto update on my machine set up to notify me, but do not automatically download and install it. I am getting an error when I try to do a update and download Office XP Service Pack 3. It's failed twice. It notifies me that the feature you are trying to use is on a CD-ROM or other removable disk that is not available. Insert the Microsoft Word 2002 disk and click OK. I searched all my disks. I don't have this disk.
Are you using Windows Update or Microsoft Update?
Windows Update.
That shouldn't do your Office programs.
Yeah, that's,
the Microsoft Update does Microsoft OS and Microsoft apps.
And I think what it's saying is it doesn't know you own a copy, so it wants you to put the CD in so it can verify.
Yeah, it's verification.
Do you have any pieces of the Microsoft Office?
I do have Word 2002.
So you should have a disk for it.
I looked, I couldn't find it.
Yeah, well, then with the Dell, it comes pre-installed.
And you're supposed to make your own disk?
It depends.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of those bundled programs, they don't give you disks because you're supposed to make your own.
It might be in a white envelope. And,
But in either case, if you can't find it anymore, then you're screwed, basically.
Okay. Well, basically now I've just unchecked that box. And the other thing is this, my machine has notified me and installed the same update four times already. It's KB96.77.15. And if I went manually to right now to check and see if I need any updates, it would tell me again that I need this KB96.77.15 update. But in the last month or so, I've already have it installed, and it shows up in my history as four times.
What service pack are you on right now?
3.
Hmm. You can go into the Windows folder.
Yeah, it's probably a registry entry that got messed.
Got hammered. And you can delete all those blue folders that usually show up as blue as updates.
Mm-hmm.
And you can delete all those.
Okay. In the registry?
No. In the Windows folder.
Okay.
You'll see up at the top that there's the uninstall, once they're in, you can delete all those update folders because it might still have a bad entry in that it's checking. So try deleting it and then try doing it again.
This is apparently a common problem with this update. One of the suggestions is to boot into safe mode and install it again.
Okay. In safe mode?
Yeah.
Also, delete those other folders, though. You don't need them.
You can also go to Add Remove Programs in your control panel and delete that update.
The multiple times I have it.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And then let it reinstall once for good.
Okay. Last question is also when I was searching for the help support section from Microsoft, I currently do not have something called Microsoft Support Diagnostic Platform, which is a data collection ActiveX control. Should I download this and install it?
Don't bother anymore. Microsoft doesn't care about XP. They stopped caring and aren't collecting data
last
from
year.
It.
So don't even
bother with it. Oh, by the way, pretty soon all your updates are going to stop working because Microsoft is no longer going to update Microsoft's XP except for security updates that it considers critical.
I bet you, though, until they get Windows 7 out there, notice, folks, that in the forum, I am saying Windows 7.
Windows 7, not System 7.
Yeah, well, I get going because there's i7, which is the new chip out, and then Windows 7.
And the system 7.
Yeah.
But it was on the Mac.
Wait, so, absolutely. You know, there's so many 7s out there. But Windows 7 is due out, you know, later. I think it's going to be out before
Blake
Christmas.
Blake 7.
Blake 7, yeah.
Yeah. And,
Villa survived because he hit the floor when the firing started, because that's what he would do.
There we go. Huh? A closet Blake 7 fan in the other room.
Paul Dura was just on something the other day. Was it?
All right, never mind that. Let's finish this.
But anyways, Windows 7, though, I think it's going to be out. So I think this is going to force a lot of the Windows to still support XP until that comes out. Because too many companies in upper places, even like the
Well, they're also
RIT.
Talking about the other... we're going to be forced into it.
Yeah, but
they're going to stop supporting XP so that you are forced to upgrade. The big problem we're going to have is what do you do about netbooks? The big problem Microsoft is going to have is what do you do about netbooks? And we're not at all sure because they say Windows 7 will run on netbooks. Maybe it'll run on a 2 gig netbook, but why are you spending all that extra money just to run Windows 7?
And there aren't that many 2 gig netbooks.
No, there aren't. There will be more as time goes on.
There will have to be, but as you say, what do you do with the existing?
Yeah.
Right. Base. Well, they're all running Linux, and that's the thing that's really porking off Microsoft right now.
Well, they're not all. Most of them are being sold with Microsoft XP.
Yeah, they are, but that's not... Well, they
not
are being sold with XP, and that's all really Microsoft cares about.
Well, okay, I grant you that.
Yeah, yeah. The one I'm about to buy will probably come with XP, and I will immediately remove it.
Naturally.
Which, gosh, gives me an XP license to not use.
Just put on eBay.
There we go. But yeah, so yeah, I don't know that I don't know how much longer. You know, they've already said they're going to stop supporting it very shortly, except for critical security updates. So we're really going to be finding that people are going to be forced to move to something.
For consumer OSs, it's 5 years from date of purchase. For business OSs, it's 10 years.
Yeah, but they've already already redone that a half a dozen times. But the reality is that people just simply can't afford something new nowadays.
Yeah,
it's that easy, folks. Just go out and buy a new machine. It'll have Windows 7 on it. I don't think so. I can't afford a new machine.
And that was one of the huge problems with Vista. Is people tried to buy Vista for their old machines, and it just doesn't work well on old machines.
Even the machines that said they were Vista ready.
And the thing that's really porking a lot of people off too is once they tried to upgrade from Windows XP to Vista, it deactivates your Windows XP license.
Right.
So when you try to go back with the original disk, it says, sorry, we can't validate this one because it's no longer a good one.
According to Microsoft's current lifecycle document, Windows XP Professional mainstream support will be retired this coming April 14th, 2009.
I'll say it here first. This is the dawning of the Ubuntu decade.
That's what they're saying. It's the year of the Linux laptop. Desktop. Linux desktop. Those of you who have older machines and are looking to get some life out of them, really, it's time to start looking at Linux. Ubuntu is the most popular Linux distribution. Linux Mint is very good. There's a bunch of them out there that are good. But I'll tell you what, if you don't have some experience with Linux, you're missing out on the possibility of keeping those old machines running really in tip-top condition.
Very much so.
All right, I think we got
the Lugar Users Group.
The Lugar Users Group?
Lugar Users... Take two. Lugar Users Group is meeting this Thursday. RIT Building 70. Follow everybody else heading into the auditorium.
Yeah, right. It's right across the end from the entrance.
Pretty much.
It's hard to miss.
So if you want to learn a little bit about Linux, that's a good place to start.
Yep.
I think that's 7 o'clock. Check the Lugar website, lugar.org, probably.
L-U-G-O-R, Linux Users Group of Rochester.org. That website, by the way, maintained on hardware provided by the E. Philip Saunders College of Business at the Rochester Institute of Technology. Thank you. All right. We've got time for a very quick question from Jim. Jim from Churchville. Jim, what's your question?
Hi. I have a Word document. That I have lost my menu bar. Hello?
Yes.
Yeah. And I can't.
Which version of Word are you using?
2001.
There is a preference to turn off the menu bars and the toolbars and to go into full screen mode. Yeah. And that's. Do you see any of the toolbars?
Nope, I don't see. All I have is a document with a scale across the top and a scale up and down.
Yeah, you've gone into full screen mode.
Right.
Will Escape take him out of that?
Not a big deal.
No, I think it's F11, but I'm looking that up.
Yeah.
No, F11, all F11 does for me is nothing.
Is there a view menu?
F12 brings up
no menus at all.
It should be escape. It could be Alt V and Alt, then U.
Yep. Alt V.
V as U. In Victor. U Alt as U. In Ubuntu.
Okay.
In older versions of Word, it was F10.
Right, so...
F10 doesn't do anything for me.
Then what about escape?
Pardon?
Escape.
Escape?
Yes.
Just hit escape by itself?
Yeah, that might work.
No, nothing happens there.
Try that Alt-V and then press the U key.
Alt-V, holding down the U key, Alt-V
no.
And then U altogether?
No, hold down the Alt key, press the V, let go of both of them, and then press U.
Nothing?
Is your keyboard plugged in?
Yeah, I'm a laptop.
Laptop.
Alt-V.
That's a good chance it's plugged in.
Could it be one of the functions?
I have two users on the laptop, and the Word document on the second user works great.
Yeah, it's clear that you've set full screen mode. Unfortunately, those are the only ways we know of to get out of it. It's Alt-V, then press U.
Alt-V and then U,
In Word 2003, you move your cursor up to the top and the menus come back. Nope. But if you're using 2001...
What you might want to do is go on the other
user... Wait a minute. You've got Word...
If it's the only one document, go in under the other user, copy and paste it into a new document and name it something different and see if it comes back in.
It's not document-based. It's program-based.
Say that one more time. Go into...
If this happens with every document you open...
Yeah.
Yeah, then
and this,
sorry, I thought Dave's
tip won't help
you. You're using Word 2001 on a Mac?
No, on a HP PC.
Then it's not 2001. 2001 was only for Mac.
Well, it doesn't matter. Those are the only keyboard shortcuts.
Yeah, each version has a different keyboard shortcut.
And it really is, the choices are Escape.
Okay.
Alt-V, and then that U.
Okay.
And then F10.
Yep, none of those worked.
Try restarting the machine. Maybe it's locked up.
I've restarted the machine a half dozen times.
Now, you're on a laptop... I don't know what to tell you. We have to take...
Yes, here's one that says Alt-V with no U, just Alt-V.
Well, and that shows the actual menu.
Alt-V doesn't do anything for me.
Right.
Alt-V, no. U,
right.
No.
I really don't know what to tell you. Those are all of the choices and all of the versions of Windows that I know about.
Yeah, if I hit F12, it'll bring up the Save As screen.
Right.
If I do some of the other functions, I can bring up.
Try the other Alt key. Maybe your Alt key is messed up. Do you have an Alt key on the right-hand side of the keyboard?
No, it's on the left-hand side.
Sometimes there's another one on the right-hand side.
Look to see if you have another one. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes on Soundbites at 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enrich.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Alex Vanderweel.
And at 51 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Our next caller is Bob from Greece. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
On certain websites, I get a thing that says Firefox prevented this page from automatically redirecting to another page.
Right.
Then I can allow, and it does it, but it's why does it keep doing that?
It's a safety feature. Often, one of the ways that the bad guys capture your data is by redirecting you to a page that looks like the page you want to go to, but isn't. So, for example, you go to PayPal, and you get redirected to a fake PayPal page that looks like the real PayPal page, and you log in with your credentials. Now they own your PayPal account.
Okay.
So Firefox brings up a thing that says, we didn't let this thing forward.
Because the page you're trying to go to is a bad page.
Maybe.
Probably.
Well, it could be a false positive. We had problems here a few weeks ago where the R News main homepage got hit as a false positive. Right.
I get lots of false positives.
This is on my bank account all the time, where I do my banking.
Generally, you want to be very, very careful.
Especially if it's a name brand bank like Citibank or one of those, because they get targeted by these fake websites all the time.
Right. Okay. You want to really make sure that you are, in fact, on your bank's website.
Well, actually, I can get into the website. It's one I want to close out. I can get in it, okay. And then
it's sending you away, and then what Firefox is saying is, this is a known target, so let's be careful.
It's erring on the side of caution.
And that's never a bad thing.
So, you don't want to get too complacent about ignoring that error message, because one of these days it may be true and preventing you from going to a bad site.
All righty. There you go.
Okay.
Our next caller is KJ from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, KJ. What's your question?
Lauren, thanks.
you remember CompuServe?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. I really like that browser or the program browser they had because of the mail feature on it. And one thing I really liked was the when you got an email, it would announce it. You got mail. Remember
right.
That? Do you know of any other browsers these days that have that function?
Well it's not a browser. But Thunderbird...
Right, it would be an email program, not a web browser.
Right, an email program like Thunderbird will announce, and you can make it set any sound you want to be the mail sound.
So does Apple Mail. Most of them,
it'll give you a warning when new mail comes in.
If you are getting your mail through the web, then it is unlikely that that will happen, because most web-based mail programs don't have a sound associated
like
with
MSN
them.
Or Yahoo.
MSN or Yahoo or Gmail or Hotmail, they don't have a sound associated with them, and that's at their end. But if you're getting your mail through a real email program like Thunderbird, then you can, in fact, set a sound.
And that was one of the big things on AOL for years, that you've got mail sound. And we always were trying to figure out who that was, and is he getting any money every time that says you've got mail?
Yeah, that was great. I like that.
Yeah. Virtually any mail program like Thunderbird or Apple Mail or even Eudora can be set to play a sound when you get new mail, and that sound can be anything you want, even a recording saying you've got mail.
Yeah. Okay.
Mine is my daughter saying, Daddy, you've got mail. All righty.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Days. Our next caller is Jack from Webster, New York. Welcome, Jack. What's your question?
Yeah, you got me sold on Ubuntu. I absolutely love it.
Good.
I cannot get Ubuntu to see my Windows box or vice versa. I've tried Samba, I've tried NFS, and I just can't seem to have any luck. Do you guys have any recommendations for references?
You're trying to access files over the network.
What's that?
You're trying to access files over the network.
Yeah, I can't access files. I can't see the printer that's hooked up to the Windows box.
There's a couple of things. First, you have to have a username and password on that other system.
Okay.
If they are the same as your username and password on your Ubuntu box, that helps. But it doesn't have to be the same. You just have to set it up. So if you were to go into printers and say search the network, you don't see the printer there.
No.
Is it a network printer?
It's set up to be a network printer, but it's physically hooked up to the Windows box.
But the Windows box is sharing it.
So you have to have Samba installed and running correctly to see Windows shares.
That's right, and that's where I think I'm screwing up.
Yeah.
All right, so you installed Samba.
That's right.
The SMB client.
Yeah, on the Windows machine?
No, on the Linux box.
Yes, I did.
So you installed Samba. You installed SMBFS.
Yep.
And you installed SMB Client.
No.
You want to install SMB Client as well.
That way you can see an SMB server, which is your Windows machine.
Right.
Okay.
Installing SMB server on the Linux box will let Windows see the Linux box as a Windows machine.
Okay.
So there's two halves to the equation.
All right. Well, that explains my consternation then.
Yeah, the other way to see is can the Windows box see the Linux box, and then you know that you've got the SMB server set up okay under Linux.
Right. Yeah, it sees the Ubuntu box, no problem.
Yeah, so there you go. You got to get the SMB client loaded in Linux. So
then, Jack, you'll have to share the printer on the Windows box to the network.
Yeah, I think he said he's already doing that.
Yeah, I'm already doing that.
I think that's where you need to go at this point. Make sure that you've got the SMB client installed as well. You may need at that point to reboot.
Okay.
Just to make sure it starts. You can always go /init.d/samba.
Shouldn't have
restart,
to.
But just,
doesn't hurt.
But if it doesn't show, then restart.
Yeah, well, I tell you, I have a 10-year-old machine that was going to be a boat anchor, and I just threw Ubuntu on it for the heck of it, and it flies.
It flies.
It's the beauty of Linux.
Linux is a very fast, people keep saying, well, I have to buy a faster machine. No, you just have to get a faster operating system, that's Ubuntu.
You got me sold.
That's what I like to hear.
No. That's not the way you're going to convince your wife that you need another machine at home. If you keep
You're not kidding.
I'm trying to help you here.
I appreciate that. No matter what. Well, but I've been running Ubuntu, so when Ubuntu slows down, I do have to buy a new machine.
Yeah, there you go.
Right.
Okay. All right. There you go. I'm just trying to help you,
All right, Jack, let us know how that works out for you. All right, well, I believe we have reached the end of another show. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. Please call earlier next week. I know there are those of you who just woke up and realized you're an hour behind the rest of us. But next week, get up at the regular time and call early. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, who so ably does all of the post-production on this show every week. And actually, all of them managed to get up on time and be here. Chris, what time did you get here? About 4 a.m.? You were here when we got
here. Roughly, yeah.
And, of course, the mighty Alex Vanderweel. I'm Nick Francesco. Thanks for listening.